with Scott Allen.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in this beautiful world. I am your host, Scott J. Allen, and this is Phronesis, Practical Wisdom for Leaders. Now, I am a professor of management at John Carroll University in Cleveland, Ohio, USA. In addition, I'm a husband and father of three teens. Now, this is a family endeavor. Will played the intro, Kate voiced the intro, and who knows, you may hear from Emily a little later. I'm also an author, entrepreneur, speaker, and co-founder of the Collegiate Leadership Competition. I love to travel, explore new places with family, and learn from others. Phronesis offers a smart, fast-paced discussion about all things leadership and followership, if we're honest. My guests are scholars and practitioners, and we cover relevant topics and incorporate practical tips designed to help you make a difference in how you lead and live. I am proud to share a few updates. According to Listen Notes, Phronesis is listed as among the top 3% of podcasts in the world because of you. So thank you. In addition, the podcast has two sponsors. First, Phronesis is the official podcast of the International Leadership Association, an association that is near and dear to my heart. ILA brings together leaders and those who teach, study, and develop leadership, advancing leadership knowledge and practice for a better world. Learn more at ila-net.org. My second sponsor is the Bowler College of Business at John Carroll University. At Bowler, we offer several advanced degrees and MBAs, and I'm confident that there's one that will fit your location, interests, and timeline. In fact, our online MBA is ranked as the number one in Ohio and number nine in the United States. We offer international study tours, a contemporary and forward-looking curriculum, and access to senior leaders and flagship organizations. Learn more at business.jcu.edu. You can find links to both sponsors in the show notes. Now, if you like what we're up to, please hit subscribe so you can stay current as we release new episodes each week. You can also share what we're up to with others, friends, colleagues, leaders, teams, students, and others you think will benefit. And now, today's show.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the Phronesis podcast. Thank you so much for checking in. We appreciate it. Today, we have a fun conversation. My guest is Gordon Schmidt, Dr. Gordon Schmidt. He's a professor of management at the University of Louisiana, Monroe, and he has a doctorate in organizational psychology from Michigan State University. And he researches the future of work and how technology is changing the nature of company-employee relations today, which has been published in a number of academic journals. He co-edited a book with Richard Landers on how social media is used in selection and recruitment. He does research related to virtual leadership and how technology impacts the leadership process. He's done research related to the gig economy and communities of gig workers who have sprung up around crowdsourcing sites like Amazon Mechanical Turk. And he's written about the future of the field of IO psychology related to outreach of the field to those in practice. He also researches leadership and/or motivation in varied contexts, including lean production, corporate social responsibility initiatives, job apathy, and popular culture. He teaches courses in organizational behavior, training methods, employee relations, organizational development, organizational theory, leadership, and human resources. Listeners, I hope you're getting the theme here. His work related to teaching has been presented at conferences and published in a number of journals. He won a Teaching Excellence Award from his college in 2015, and he acted as the program chair for the 2020 virtual Management and Organizational Behavior Teaching Society Conference. He is the incoming co-editor for the journal Management Teaching Review. He consults with organizations primarily related to leadership, motivation, and social media related arenas. Now, he has just co-authored a book, and this is a fun conversation that we are about to engage in, but this is really all about leadership. But leadership through a very, very specific lens. This book is called Leaders Assemble! Leadership in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Now, I must admit, I was a little bit intimidated because I think I've watched probably six of these. And if I'm not mistaken, Gordon, there's upwards of 30 of these films now. I mean, they have just exploded in the last decade and a half. But before we jump in, what blanks do we need to fill in about you, sir? What do listeners need to know about Gordon?
So my background, as you had said, Scott, you know, I've got a PhD in organizational psychology. My undergrad degree is in industrial and labor relations from Cornell University, which has a great program there. And so really going into sort of this whole world of work, I've always been really interested in how people interact with each other, you know, their relationships they develop, how they kind of all work together. It's been something I've always been interested in from a research perspective, but just as a kid, I did a science research club as a kid, and everybody did biology or chemistry, often in like the labs of their parents. And I was the weird one doing a psychology project on attachment style and how it affects trust of people and groups in society. And so it's really that sort of the human experience, the human mind, how we interact, that's always been really interesting to me. And as that's developed over time, kind of as I went to graduate school and as my career kind of started going, we've seen technology become sort of even more salient than we've seen before. The social media developing, computers being really central to everyday people's lives. You know, there sort of was an idea of people don't really need computers. You know, they're just for work or they're just for a few people. And so this has really exploded into this. This stuff is essential for how we interact and how we connect. Saying there's an audience that's listening to a podcast while talking to Scott through a Zoom, through the internet. Like, it's just, this is an integral part of our life. And there was a time in our lives, Scott, even, where this was just sort of starting. You know, it took a few years for the computer to even get here where I had one with access. And so that really became interesting to me. And as I was going further in graduate school, I got very interested in the tech part of it to a significant degree. And so that's kind of driven a lot of my standing, is really thinking about how does this really affect what we do? And it's something I engage in a lot. We do a lot of outreach through social media. We do a lot of connecting with people online. So that's kind of the piece for me, is it seemed very natural flow, although not a lot of other people were doing it, especially early.
So Gordon, I appreciate that. We also have Sai Islam, who is the co-author of this book, and he has 10 years of experience in a variety of corporate, academic, and applied settings. He is an associate professor of IO psychology at Farmingdale State College, where he teaches courses related to training and leadership development. And he is joining us for the conversation today. Sai, what else do listeners, other than you are wrangling a two-year-old, you have your own leadership challenge kind of cooking right now.
Well, I've wrangled him into a nap. So that's really, you know, it's quite the miracle. I don't know how that happened. But he also woke up like super early today. So maybe that's how it works. Leading a child, not recommended, number Ooh. One. You know, because they don't really pay attention to what you want to say. There's not a lot of task orientation, and the relationship piece is even harder to achieve unless you're some kind of unicorn or fuzzy animal.
So. Yes. Well, I'm excited to have the two of you here. I'm excited for this conversation. I think you're approaching this topic of leadership in a really fun, interesting, and engaging lens, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because obviously film can serve as a wonderful case study for a lot of these concepts that we discuss. As I was reading the book, I kept thinking back to, I used to give this one specific type of exam. And so the two of you reference Wetton and Cameron, that textbook in the book a few times. And I used to take some of the main concepts. Let's just take the concepts from stressors, rapid change and encounter stressors and all of these different concepts. I put them into like 100 different kind of unique, distinct concepts that I wanted the students to know. So the first exam was kind of get those things out of your head. What were they? Just do you have a general understanding of these things? And that was always very scary for students, but they always did incredible on that exam. And then the second exam was, okay, I'm going to show you a film. And in real time, I want you to provide me a narrative of what you're seeing. And it was beautiful. I mean, I could show the film Whiplash, you know, the drumming film that won an Academy Award a few years ago. It's a little bit harsh in points. Or I could show the film Cry Freedom, or I could show the film Glory. It really didn't matter what film I showed. It was always this really, really beautiful thing, you all, where they would be looking at the film, and in a certain scene, some of the students would see stressors or associated concepts having to do with problem solving or any number of other influence tactics. In the same scene, they'd be seeing different things happening. And I would get back these 10, 12 paragraph essays as they're watching this film in real time. They didn't know what it was going to be. And we'd get these just beautiful narratives. So the whole notion of using film and using this whole series of films as a backdrop for some of these concepts that we discuss, especially given the popularity of these films, I think it's just a great way to meet people where they are. So talk about the origin story of this project for the two of you. How did you all come up with this idea? I think it's brilliant.
We were both bitten by radioactive spiders. That's how this started.
Yeah, that'll do it, right?
Radioactive editor, actually.
That's great.
Now, so actually, Gordon and I are big nerds, and we really both love Marvel Comics. And Gordon brought this call for proposals for books to my attention. Came from Emerald Publishing. They were looking for people to write books where we were exploring effective leadership practices through popular culture. Gordon kind of knew the editor of that series, Dr. Mike Urich, and he'd already written a book about Star Wars and about Lord of the Rings. And so we thought, you know, we both really love Marvel, and we'd been talking about the Marvel movies and Marvel comics off and on for years. And in the kind of outreach work that that we'd done, we were also finding that pop culture kind of, you know, helped us connect everyday people, because the phrase IO psychology or even leadership development doesn't really resonate with people in the same way. And so we submitted a proposal and it was accepted. And we thought, wow, this is great. And we kind of took a lot of the conversations that we'd had about different types of leaders within the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And that served as sort of the basis of a lot of what we ended up writing about in the book.
Gordon, anything you want to add to that? The backdrop of how you all came to this as the topic?
I think too, Cy and I have worked on a decent amount of work related to this idea of sort of the outreach of industrial organizational psychology and, you know, management ideas to the public. Because I think it's a real issue, right? Is especially in leadership, there's a lot of, we'll just call it crap out there. Or a lot of stuff that's really idiosyncratic is for this leader in this context, they did good. And so therefore, we should also, you know, wear the same outfit every day, because then we're going to be successful, right? To me, it's especially vital that this research that's been done, this empirically supported work, this rigorous work actually gets out there in the world. And so Cy and I have done a number of papers sort of about industrial organizational psychology and how can we do outreach through things like social media, through things like memes, through sort of coming up with ways that this stuff is digestible to the public.
Yep.
And Cy wrote a great blog post related about this as well, related to the Marvel book. Is to us, this book really made sense with that goal. Is it's a really fun way to do outreach. It meant we had to watch a bunch of Marvel movies again, which is always fun. We got to have more discussions. I always end up sending Cy like, I'm like, I'm watching this movie. Here's my reaction to it. We're thinking about it through this lens of our work, right? What do these things mean and how does this relate? And so the book was a great way to kind of act on some of those discussions we have all the time through Twitter direct message about these things, especially because, you know, we don't necessarily, you know, at younger age, we watched a movie like Empire Strikes Back and we didn't critically look at it or think about the concept. That's a fantastic movie still, by the way.
Oh,
I would say beyond just nostalgia. Some of the movies I watch, I'm like, nostalgically, this is great. I'm thinking it was a kid, but Empire, I was watching it recently with my 4-month-old son, and I was just like, this movie's just really good. Like, objectively, it does a great job, right?
So Gordon, you touched a nerve. I don't know if you can see in my background, but there is an R2-D2 literally right there, okay? Now, probably, other than my children being born and my wedding day, one of my best favorite days of my life, my cousin, I'm in Iowa, Cedar Falls, Iowa. My cousin, 5 years older than me. I'm at this point, what? It's 1980. I'm 8 years old. My cousin takes me to the theater and we watch Empire like 3 times. Oh, wow. I think I ate licorice and popcorn. That's all I ate all day. I think we snuck back into the film 2 times. So we saw Empire. It was the best day of my life. One of them, other than those other ones I just mentioned. So I can geek out with you on certain levels here because yes, I mean, it's fascinating because again, so many of the things that we discuss at times we're using words and language that it's foreign to many. But you know what? That list of stressors in that textbook that I mentioned a little bit ago, that's what makes great film. That's what great makes great sports. That's what it's humans under those stressors having to engage in. It's the hero's journey, right? That whole textbook is hero's journey type stuff. I need to put together a team to tackle this challenge because we have some evildoer and we're going to have to problem solve and we're going to have to influence people in that process and navigate all kinds of different puzzles. And you all are making that accessible, which I think is just, I think it's wonderful. I really do. Can we jump into one specific chapter that I really enjoyed?
Sure.
Okay. So Guardians, a beautiful film for the importance of team, right? Beautiful film for that. So would you all talk a little bit about that? What were some observations that listeners might be interested in?
So I think with the Guardians, one of the really interesting things that we came across was that each of the members of the Guardians of the Galaxy, they're pretty independent and they're very powerful on their own.
Yes.
Right? Like Rocket Raccoon has his own adventures. Gamora has a whole history. Peter Quill, Star-Lord, has his own history. Drax has his own history. And so one of the more interesting pieces with regards to the Guardians of the Galaxy is how do you get a group of people that are extremely independent and don't really want to be a part of a team and have very little interest in being a part of a team together on a team? And we see that reflected a lot in some of my leadership coaching work and in some of the examples that Gordon and I talk about in classes, where sometimes you have a group of people that are technically extremely proficient and they're technical leaders. They're able to, you know, kind of spout off any sort of knowledge that they might have, but then bringing them all together as a team is really difficult.
Yes.
And we see something similar with this with the Avengers too, right? Where you have a dream team of superheroes. How do you get them to come together? But the Guardians of the Galaxy are actually very good at shared leadership. Each Guardian leads at different points of the movie. So you'll see it at a certain point, people turn to Rocket for a plan. They look to Star-Lord for some sort of improvisation. They look to Gamora to lead them in a fight. And so we can kind of illustrate this idea of shared leadership, how a team with a group of very talented individuals can switch off leadership roles in the midst of a fight. And we see this a lot. You know, usually when we talk about shared leadership, we talk about this in like an army context, but it's hard to kind of help people who've never been, you know, in that kind of a stressful situation to think about that. Because usually when we think about teams, we have think about sports teams and things like that. Sometimes it's harder to parse. But in Guardians of the Galaxy, in the first kind of prison break in that movie, you see a perfect example of them kind of switching from who's the leader, who's not the leader, and utilizing those different skills that they happen to have to kind of accomplish a goal. And it really illustrates that idea very well.
Gordon?
Yeah, I think Si did a great job talking about a lot of those elements. To me, the Marvel movies, there's so many of these strong individuals interacting, and they don't have to listen to each other. You're still Iron Man if Captain America doesn't listen to you or you don't want to listen to him, right? And so I think that's such an much more like real life. My work is part of my life, but it's not the whole thing, and I don't have to listen, have to do some aspects. I got to do enough to stay not getting fired. But oftentimes we get a lot of leadership advice is, well, here's a great CEO. Everyone listened and he probably did all the work. And it's usually a he, of course, right? A lot of those CEOs we talk about all the time are dudes. Well, the Marvel movies show people working together where there isn't necessarily an official leader. There isn't necessarily, we have to be here or, you know, we all get along perfectly. And I think it makes us be able to really talk about leadership concepts as they happen versus just sort of the best case scenario or even something like transformational leadership, right? It's great, but the idea that we have a transformational leader, they speak and all of us follow, can be bad. And I see a lot of people apply something like transformational in ways that are bad because they assume you listen to the boss. They inspire you to then do exactly what they say while they're often micromanaging you, right? They lose what the concept is about and they focus on that individual leader. The Marvel movies has all these people in conflict with each other, different perspectives. And so we see actual leadership as influence, tactics of us needing to work together versus just listen to the boss.
Yes.
Which happens way too often in leadership in the wild and how we think about it. When in fact, a lot of it is peers working with each other, influencing each other. And even the boss needs to actually influence people versus just tell them what to do.
Yeah. Well, I definitely want to get to the, because one of the last chapters is on gender. And,
oh, yeah.
And I want to get to that. And maybe we'll close there. Maybe each one of you talk about another chapter that you particularly enjoyed, that you just found really fun to write and to apply some of these concepts to that chapter. And I could go to each one of you just to highlight, and again, give listeners a little bit of a taste, because obviously we want them to go purchase the book. We want them to explore the text on their own. But what were some that stood out for you as just really enjoyable to write? Sai?
So I'm a big fan of Black Panther. That might be my favorite of the Marvel movies. And I really love being able to kind of dig in and think about what makes T'Challa a great leader, you know, in Black Panther. And then also kind of think about, this was not expected, but we kind of looked at the succession planning of, you know, a place like Wakanda or a place like Asgard, where you have this royal succession, this lineage that they're supposed to follow. It was really a lot of fun when writing about Black Panther in particular to see how many different kinds of leaders there are. So there's T'Challa, who's a person he's given power, he has formal title, but he also kind of earns that because he loses that title at a certain point, and then he has to do outreach to an enemy and build an ally out of an enemy. He's got to be able to assign roles to people on his team. We see other great leaders, like especially female leaders like Okoye, who has leadership in a very non-traditional female position of being a military leader. We get to see another kind of non-traditional female leader in terms of science with his sister Shuri. And it was really a lot of fun to kind of dig into that, to be able to show what representation in these different settings kind of looks like. Of course, I just really enjoyed talking about Black Panther as a character. It's a character I grew up with. So to see him on the big screen and to see that kind of come to life was a lot of fun. And I think readers will enjoy that as well, because there's, even if you've seen the movie a couple of times, there's a lot to dig into in terms of the actions, right?
Yep.
And one of, you know, Gordon mentioned earlier that we spent a lot of time on social media. One of the most interesting things about Black Panther is the number of people that are on social media that say, hey, Killmonger was right. Killmonger, he's right. He's got all the right facts. And that really highlights something that we know about leaders, that sometimes a leader can be correct. So someone can be kind of factually correct about what they're doing, what approach they're taking, but still, because they don't really care about the group or the organization, which is the case with Killmonger, that makes him not a very good leader.
Yep.
And so, sure, you can say that he's right about what Wakanda should do in, you know, do more outreach, provide more support to people, but the way in which he wants to go about it and what he really cares about is really what derails him as a leader. We see this all the time in the real world, where somebody maybe is correct, but they rub people the wrong way. They don't know how to build a team. They don't know how to negotiate effectively. And those things are really important. So leadership isn't just that technical knowledge. It's also that ability to get people on your side and to really care about the organization and the team that you're a part of.
Yep. Love it. Gordon, what stands out for you?
Sure. One chapter that I definitely liked writing is, we do a chapter on Captain America's Civil War and this conflict. On the Avengers, related to basically how the Avengers should be run, who should be in charge. And one of the things I like about it, and I think that's something that sometimes get missed when we talk about examples of leadership, is I think it's a good example of people making mistakes and doing the wrong thing. And so what you essentially have in Captain America Civil War is there's a disagreement over who should have control over the team. Iron Man thinks that the UN comes in and says, we should be in charge, we should set, you know, the missions, we should be in control. And he says that we have too much power as individuals. We need this outside sort of oversight. We need this larger organization to be in control. Meanwhile, Captain America says, no, it should be based on our own morals. Our own values should drive this. I don't want to do that. And so we've got these two people that are, you know, significant leaders on the team in conflict. And what we see is bad conflict management here. Yeah. It really is my way or the highway in both directions. When they both have good points, those are both options of which way we should go. But instead of trying to come up with a compromise or a collaboration where we come up with something that meets their needs, the team basically breaks up. And I would argue a lot of the later Marvel films, the Avengers are in a much worse shape or not even kind of together because they couldn't figure out a way to really talk about their interests and figure out what's going on with something that would really work.
Yeah.
Because they didn't really look at their positions. They didn't really dig into them and see what really matters. Si and I have talked about this before. Could have been the UN helps to pick some of the missions and members can decide what missions they want to do or how they want to do them, right? How they implement them, how tasks are done. Maybe you can always opt out of a mission if it doesn't fit with your values.
Yep.
That might be a good compromise. It might meet people's needs, but instead they just get caught in their own positions. And to me, I think that's a nice thing you can learn from movies where there's less ego, right? Is you can say Captain America was wrong, Iron Man was wrong here. Well, it's very hard to say my boss was wrong, or often myself, right? My own ego. But to see, okay, this happened. Was there a situation where I did that my way or the highway when we really should have figured out more what our interests lie? Now, it's possible after they worked everything through, they were still so far apart, they couldn't have come up with a solution. I'm willing to consider that's a possibility, but they did not put in that work and they did not really solicit other people's ideas, you know, for other things that could happen. They didn't really solicit other members getting involved in the discussion. Yep. Because, you know, if everybody but Captain America agrees, maybe Captain America would go along or see the value. Instead, it was really these two leaders fought and everyone else wasn't included and stepped back, which made it kind of one versus one when maybe the group kind of agreed in some direction. So to me, that was a really interesting chapter, and to think about it a little differently than just, oh, you know, we have fisticuffs. Yep. That process work was really crucial to the success. And that's part of the reason there was a lot of problems.
Well, even as you're talking right there, I mean, for some reason, my mind went to, I recently watched the Beatles documentary. Mm-hmm. Where was it Get Back?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, if the two of you have not watched that, again, fascinating, because you can look at that through the lens of conflict and just or Metallica's Some Kind of Monster, you know, where they literally are trying to work through, and maybe that was a watershed moment for them because they're still together, they're still making music. Yeah. But I mean, I do love this aligning with what's in our environment to help people better understand these concepts, better understand how literally the whole IO psychology in many ways, and I shouldn't say whole, that's not a fair way of saying it, but many of the concepts we've discussed, many of them, they have a little bit of a fancier word or name, but they're in front of us all day long on television, in sports, in our environment, in our families. And that's what I love when I'm working with students and they can see how these concepts permeate all aspects of our life. And speaking of, you all have this chapter on gender. Would you talk a little bit about that? Because that's a very real, real component when it comes to the cinematic universe, that female representation and female leadership is underrepresented.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, I'm proud of with the book a bit, too, is that we're not just, ooh, Marvel's the coolest and they did everything right and, you know, everything was correct. Because, again, we want people to reflect and use this to learn. And so I would certainly, and we argue, I think, in that chapter some that, you know, we really don't have female leader representation very well within this Marvel universe in terms of the movies. In the comics, there are more female leaders, but also, you know, a lot more comics. So yeah. From a percentage perspective, it's still pretty low. We look at that within the movies. One big example that kind of came out when we watched the movies again in detail, thinking about it in leadership, was this idea of Black Widow being the leader. So you have in the movie, you have this big event where half the population, you know, disappears. You have this, the biggest crisis ever, essentially. And most of the male leaders, people like Captain America or Iron Man or Hulk, basically leave. They go and do their own thing to various degrees. Captain America is helping people deal with the grief, and that's great. But it seems like he's stepped back from leadership of these Avengers and these superheroes. And so we have this period that's called kind of the five-year gap while people are missing during that. But while we call it a gap, we act like, oh, nothing, you know, 5 years passed. During those 5 years, the world was still happening with half the population. And so Black Widow, female leader, basically steps up and is essentially leading the Avengers, but also seems to be kind of leading the whole world of superheroes and superhero-related aspects. And it's kind of interesting because it connects to a number of concepts that we actually see with female leaders and the difficult positions they get put in. So I'm sure most of your listeners are familiar with the glass ceiling idea, this idea that it's hard for women and often minorities to get above a certain level. That's pretty well known. A more recent phenomenon is this idea of what's called the glass cliff, which I think is a great visual as well, is that you have a woman be put in charge of an organization, but it tends to happen when the organization is in crisis. So they say, crap, there's a lot of scandal. Maybe if we get a woman in charge, she'll fix this, or we'll get some PR. And often there's a crisis, or there's a difficult situation, or there's a high chance of failure. A woman is the leader in those circumstances. Mm-hmm. And so we talk about that with Black Widow, is that basically all the guys who were in charge have left, and Black Widow has to be in charge of this. Again, the universe doesn't get into it much. We don't see a movie on this, but it seems like she does a pretty good job, because what we see 5 years later is the world's working. We've had a huge catastrophic event, right?
And what's interesting is she's done that for 5 years, but we still call it the gap. Is that accurate?
Exactly, Scott. Yeah, it's a gap. And if you look at the leadership at that time, she's talking to a group that includes, you know, War Machine, an African American in charge of things. We've got Wakanda is represented by a woman. We've got Captain Marvel. And so we suddenly have a group of leaders in this world of superheroes that is much more multiracial, much more female, when before they weren't at the table. And it seems like, you know, they got a meeting. It's not in crisis. The world isn't on fire. Everybody is, you know, it's traumatic and people are sad, but the world seems to be functioning, frankly, maybe better than when, you know, what we saw in the past, right? We don't hear about big villains taking over other stuff. It seems like the world's doing okay. And that, I think, is a tragic element that, again, the movie doesn't get. We don't look at this period. It's just, oh, things are bad. But they don't look that bad when we see it. And then we see in the movie Ant-Man, Scott Lang comes up with an idea to get people back. Great. Half the population back sounds good. But then all of the white dudes that were leaders before come back, right? Yeah. And they're the leaders again. And Black Widow goes back to being supporting character, right? And so it does a disservice to her and, you know, female leaders, is she led during a crisis. It looks like really well. What would be a more difficult situation than she was in? But instead, it's just a blip, and now we're back to normal, and we've got our white dudes back in charge, the leaders that we had before.
And we also can't forget that she makes the biggest sacrifice. Like, she's got to go so that we can get the time stone, and so we can do all of this again, right? So she doesn't make it out of that final adventure.
Yeah, she doesn't get as big a moment as other people too that die either, yeah. Right? It's a part, it's a step versus a signature piece. And I do think that's a very real thing to consider when we look at organizations, is are we promoting women and minorities in times when it's dangerous, when they don't have much power, when they're going to fail? And it's especially a bad situation on that, because then we're like, oh, look, a woman failed. It must be that women are bad leaders. Again, you don't say that when a white dude fails. Stop making white dude leaders. But we see that way too often with women and minorities in those positions, when the research does suggest they're often put in worse situations. They're less likely to be head of the board of directors and CEO at the same time. And so the chapter goes into that quite a bit. So again, I don't think the Marvel movies are trying to argue Black Widow was done wrong, but that's certainly something that we saw emergent in it that I think is an interesting point for discussion of our readers thinking about how these issues really happen.
This part of the conversation reminded me of a documentary on Netflix that I just watched, which is called This Changes Everything. Mm-hmm. And it's all about gender disparity in Hollywood and just some of the themes that we've just discussed. And if you look at Hollywood as an industry over the decades, it's a really, really, so listeners, I'll put a link to that in the show notes so that you can check it out. It's an important view. And I think I would like to kind of wind our time down. Sai, I sense a nap ending at any moment.
Well, you know, just like a good movie, there has to be a ticking clock. Yes, so in this podcast, there's a ticking clock. We'll see if we can finish up before that happens.
So I guess maybe just a couple comments from each one of you, just anything that we haven't mentioned that's just on your mind as you think about this work. It's a lot of fun.
I think that aspect of fun is, I think, one of the most important elements that we can talk about, because usually when we talk about leadership, it's a kind of charged discussion around, you know, either politics or people's individual experiences in the workplace and things like that. And one thing that Gordon and I have a good time with, and I think people who really love both the Marvel movies and the Marvel comics have fun with, is this discussion. Yeah. Part of the reason that I think that the comic book movie has become so popularized in this moment is television has gone from just being like something we talked about at water cooler to something we really think about in depth. And Marvel movies have that same quality to them where you can have an expectation of like, wow, who's going to be in Doctor Strange 2? What's the next stage? What's the next chapter of this story? What's going to happen? Yep. And one thing that we want to be able to do here with the book is to get people to think more about what's actually happening in these stories and what does that mean for us in the real world, right?
Yes.
Because I'm certain that none of the creators of the Marvel Cinematic Universe wanted to kind of, you know, push Black Widow aside and give her this difficult leadership role, but it's something that happened and it's something that came up. And now let's think about it. Let's reflect on it. I don't think that any of the creators of the Marvel Cinematic Universe thought about, well, would anybody think that Thanos was a appealing leader in any way? But we see in all sorts of contexts in the real world that people with really harsh, negative, horrible views are seen as viable leaders. And so I think that's a good thing to reflect on. And the Marvel Cinematic Universe really helps us do it in a fun way, in a safe way, where you can pick apart these ideas and then really connect it to something that's happening in our real world. You know, I've seen it in my classes, that students really respond to that. I've seen it in my executive coaching work, that leaders themselves can reflect more easily in that setting. And I think overall, you can have some wonderful discussions with people, even if you wanted to have like a book club and have a nice little debate about who you think is the best leader. I think that that's a really great way of getting people to kind of dig in deeper into this. And it's not in a way where it feels like homework. It feels way more exciting. And I hope that, you know, the readers of this book, that they'll reach out to us. And if they think we're wrong about something, feel free to reach out and give us their perspective, because that's what being a fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe and of comic books is all about.
You shouldn't tell the internet to reach out if they disagree with us, but we're going to get in trouble at some point on that one.
Internet, please reach out. Send us a tweet, right?
Yeah. YouTube comments, please, everybody.
Yeah. You just invited it, Sai.
Oh, boy.
Okay, Gordon, what do you got, sir?
Yeah, I think Sai covered a lot of great elements there. To me, this is part of outreach and how do we get good ideas out there for people to act on it. Yeah. And I think creative frames around it is really important because I don't think it's necessarily as easy as, oh, just if people have access to our articles, they'll read them and understand it and do it. That's just not a reason. Some of those articles I don't understand, frankly. You know?
Yes. No, I'm with you.
They're never written in a way no human understands that.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so we really need to think about what is how can we help people to understand them through things that matter to them that make sense?
Yep.
And yeah, as I said, you know, people love these movies. They're interested. People have watched them multiple times. And so I think it gives an element of fun as well as learning. And honestly, I have more fun watching these movies and thinking about them and analyzing them more critically than I did the first time. Obviously, as a professor now watching stuff, I'm always now thinking about what's the leadership part or what is this? And I think people thinking about that critically, both in the movies and in their own life, is very helpful. And I find that useful in classes too, Scott, right? Like,
yeah.
Oh, my job, I never thought of this related to organizational justice, or I never thought maybe I could influence my boss. They were just the boss.
Yep.
And I think this can have a really positive impact, this being able to, tools and ways to think about our work and our lives.
I mean, it's right. And literally take Wetton and Cameron's chapter on influence tactics and look, watch Ozark. I mean, it's literally a masterclass in front of you, yeah, of use of those influence tactics, sometimes for great ill. Right. And I'm not saying they were doing good in what they were trying to influence, but they're in front of you. And so I think I love that kind of notion of this is outreach and this is a way to engage and spark interest in meeting folks where they are. And again, I think that statement can even sound a little condescending. I don't mean it to sound that way.
Oh, yeah.
I just think it's meeting people where their energy is and then saying, hey, there's really cool stuff happening here. Look at this stuff and you can make sense of what's going on. And I think that's so much fun. I think
you can make it more meaningful for us, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because like I'll read an article and be like, oh, that was kind of an interesting result and move on.
Yeah.
But connecting it to these things that we're both Cy and I are passionate about this area, we're interested in these movies. To me, it makes the concepts feel more real to me in writing the book and, you know, translating this, it made me think more about even stuff like the glass cliff and these topics, really think about them. And so I think that's the goal. It's not people can't understand the concepts. It's that we need ways that are engaging to do that for ourselves and for others, to my mind.
Exactly. Exactly. Gentlemen, I'm going to close out today with just a quick question. If someone was listening to this conversation and they don't understand the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but you want to give them a nice entry point into exploring, do they start with the first film or do they start with a film you would suggest? So how would you answer that question? What do you think? Gordon, what do you got?
So I think it's reasonable to start at some of the films that are more self-contained and go from there. So something like Black Panther, you know, you could learn a lot from it. It'd be very interesting and it can make you interested in the world around it.
Okay.
I do think something like the first Avengers movie, you could pick up who the characters are and see what threads do I want.
Okay.
So that's what I would say is probably, to me, that's kind of the best way to go. Cause yeah, it's a little hard to start at, oh, I'm going to watch Iron Man, then Iron Man 2. I'm going to watch the Hulk. I'm going to do this. But to kind of pick a point like Black Panther or something like Avengers that starts getting it together could help you see if this is something you like or it's something that's interesting. Because especially the later movies like Endgame, you're not going to get what's going on if you start there. Even though it's a very engaging work, you're going to be like, what's the blip? Who's this Thanos guy? Yeah. It ain't going to work. So you can't start at the end, definitely.
Cool. Cy?
So I was going to suggest Captain America, the First Avenger, mostly because it's the one that feels the most like Superman, the movie to me. And that's always been like a very good entry point. It's very self-contained. It has like very strong dad vibes because it takes place in World War II.
Yeah.
So, you know, if your dad is kind of like my dad, he's not interested in watching superhero stuff. There's plenty of like World War II action in it. It's got a very palpable love story as well. So I think that works. And it's funny that Gordon mentions people watching Endgame without having watched anything else. I went with a friend to see Lord of the Rings, Two Towers, and he had not seen the first Lord of the Rings and he'd never read the books. And so he didn't tell me this until after we finished the movie. So he sat there and watched a 3-hour fantasy film that he barely understood. And he was like, oh, it's still good.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Gentlemen, Thank you for making it interesting for us. We appreciate the work that you're doing. I will look forward to hearing about the next, I don't know, is it going to be Harry Potter? Is it going to be Star Trek? Who knows? Well, don't answer that. Okay. We're going to keep people in suspense. Have a wonderful summer, gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Great talking to you, Scott.
Awesome to be here. Thank you.
In chapter one, Cy and Gordon say, we think the MCU is particularly relevant for learning about leadership for a few major reasons. The first is that this film franchise is a shared universe of many characters. Characters like Iron Man, Captain America, they're protagonists of their own films, but also come together in other films as members of teams. They go on to say, this is a messy world where everyone doesn't agree or get along, which makes it a good fit with how things happen in our real world. Our real world isn't made up of people who all see things the same way and just follow whatever a leader says to do. While the nature of conflict might look different in the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, in our real lives, we all need to work together with people different from us and figure out how we can best work together to accomplish important tasks. And I love that. I think it's so true. And as you can ascertain from the interview, I love how they are using film as a vehicle to help expose readers to some really cool, fun, and important concepts. And so, Gordon and Cy, thank you for the work that you're doing. Thank you for opening my eyes to looking at these films through this lens. Admittedly, I am not an expert in these films, but I will watch them in new ways, and I appreciate that. So, if you are a fan of Star Trek, or you are a fan of some other thematic set of films, novels, series, maybe there's an opportunity for you to connect some really fun, interesting leadership concepts to an important work of art. Now, you should know that there has been a book written on Harry Potter and leadership, and I will be interviewing its author soon, and I'm going to have two special guests join me. They are huge Harry Potter fans. I've already got a list of questions, and it's going to be a lot of fun, so be on the lookout for that in the future. Take care, everyone. Be well.
You have just finished another episode of Practical Wisdom for Leaders with Scott Allen. To contact me, visit www.scottjallen.net or send me a note at scott@scottjallen.net. I can also be found on Twitter and LinkedIn, so let's connect. Now, if you have feedback, I'd love to hear it. And as always, thank you so much for listening. One final nod to our sponsors, the International Leadership Association and the Bowler College of Business at John Carroll University. And now, here's Kate's twin sister, Emily, with the outro.
You've been listening to Phronesis, Practical Wisdom with Scott Allen.